And On the Go is a presentation of the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. Support for this podcast is provided by Afoundria, the makers of ChartPath. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast. And now, here is your host for AMDA On the Go, Dr. Wayne Saltzman.
Welcome to AMDA On the Go. In this podcast, and in the presence of a studio audience at the 2019 AMDA, the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine annual meeting in Atlanta, Georgia, we will revisit the concept of deprescribing in post-acute and long-term care medicine. At the 2018 AMDA Society meeting in Grapevine, Texas, a geriatrician, a clinical pharmacist, and a leader in quality metrics and clinical outcomes presented a symposium entitled, To DC or Not DC, Implementing Deprescribing into Your Clinical Practice. They discussed common and multiple barriers to address deprescribing, from the patient to the practitioner to the system. It was clear there was still a long way to go in addressing the issues of medication management in elders or anyone with complex medical needs. In the May 7th, 2018 AMDA On The Go podcast, we interviewed the speakers and discussed why the concept of deprescribing, while perhaps not the term specifically used in the past, had been a point of contention and debate for over a generation. At this year's 2019 AMDA Society annual meeting, the discussion continues. Three geriatricians and a clinical pharmacist this time are presenting a symposium entitled Deprescribing Made Easy, a Practical, Applicable, Evidence-Based Approach to a Common but Complex Program, in which they focus on common chronic diseases, inappropriate prescribing, reduction strategies and tools for reducing medication burden and polypharmacy in the older adult population. One of those speakers, Dr. Daniel Haimowitz, has long been recognized not only as a leader in post-acute and long-term care, but also as a geriatrician who works to help us all see the trees through the forest in maintaining practical, quality, and patient-centered care. And we are fortunate to have Dr. Haimowitz with us now. Dr. Haimowitz is an internist and geriatrician and multi-facility medical director in solo practice. Dr. Haimowitz, welcome to AMDA On The Go.
Well, thank you. I have to say, it's been a dream of mine to do a podcast, even as a youth. And when I got married to my wife, Susan, who you know, she had some reservations because I had never done a podcast before. So I have to say, this is a culmination of a lifelong dream for me. And I also wore one of my favorite ties. I also brought my own cheering section who will laugh whenever I say so. How about that?
It's the magic of a podcast.
It is.
Dr. Haimowitz, I typically like to start with discussions with some kind of historical perspective. In this case, as a review of your symposium, why did you and other society leaders choose to focus on this topic again? Lead us through the most important bullet points. Are we making strides or any headway with patients, practitioners, interdisciplinary teams, and systems regarding the importance of deprescribing? Is the concept of start low, go slow, consider changing, or even stopping too complex a topic when it comes to medication management in the older population?
Well, it is a complex issue, but I don't think you can say any issue in geriatrics is too complex. You know, when we're talking about specifically for our symposium this year, which is just the deprescribing part, that's just a part of the whole medication administration process, right? I think, personally, you could have a talk on this any year in the symposium. So you don't have to be necessarily an AMDA leader about this. As it turns out, I actually think of myself, I don't know if you know this, as Joe AMDA. I do. Because I think I'm just like a regular guy, like everybody else. But this is important to me, and I think it's important to many geriatricians who practice. The point of deprescribing is that you can do something. We see this all the time, right, with all our patients. You know, mainly we work them in the nursing home, but even as the community, the issue of polypharmacy in the community is when they come to our care. You know, we can do good things for them. There are many complications of polypharmacy, which by cutting down the medications, the question is are they having side effects from them, adverse drug events? Are we actually causing harm? Can we do something that can improve quality of life? We can do this. And I think we're gradually getting there. I mean, there are articles that they're talking to people who a lot of times are the problem. For example, specialists are a problem. So I do think there are strides in this, but I think it's a long battle. The analogy is sort of like urinary tract infections. When do you, you know, when is it really urinary tract infections? Are we getting there? Yeah, but slowly, incrementally, and it's going to take a long time. I think the point with medications is that for years, society at least has thought, you know, if you have a problem, start them on a medicine, you know. So I think that if we can continue the push, and it's not, it's for prescribers, but I think it's also getting the word out to the public as well. So I think we're getting there. I think we can do a lot of good with this, and I think it's a great topic. Part of the problem, though, is I'll talk to people, and they say, oh, what are you talking about? And I'll say, deprescribing. And they'll say, that's great. That's a great topic. It's really interesting. I'm fascinated in e-prescribing. And I'll say,
no.
There's two problems with this. One is I need to speak more clearly because it's not e-prescribing. And second, I don't know anything really about e-prescribing. So it's.
Any questions from the audience?
Yes. My name is Stephanie Lay. I am a geriatrics and palliative care fellow at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York. So my question is, how do you approach discussions with patients and families about deprescribing generally? And secondly, particularly about medications people have become pretty attached to, such as sleep aids, which is one I struggle with personally.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. I think let's talk about the more specific one, the sleeping aids. I think the communication with patients and caregivers and their families is so key to this. It's so important because they may not know what the information is, what the data is, and they do get very attached to it. You have to kind of learn to roll with the punches. When I first started in practice, because they tell you sleeping pills are dangerous, right? Sedative hypnotics are dangerous. They lose effect after 14 days, and it significantly increases like 3 times risk of falls, right? They're actually, I think they're dangerous, okay? But I went to a patient, she says, I'm on sleeping pills, and I was young, just out of training, and I said, I'm taking you off those, I told her the data. I am taking you off. So you know what happened with that? She actually fired me and got a different doctor. So I think it's the communication. The communication is really key. A lot of times, families feel like they're frustrated because they go to the doctors, they want to be taken off medications, and the doctors won't let them. I went to one patient said, because this is what I talk about, and I think many geriatricians will do that. They'll start the conversation with, let's go over your medicines one by one, because you have to ask the questions. One told me she's so happy, she'd been trying to get a doctor to take her off of medicines for 9 years, and she hadn't been able to do that. So I think it's really important. The other thing that you need to do is you need to ask the question. And this is one of my favorite stories. So I'm meeting this 90-year-old, and she's on an antidepressant. And I say, well, why are you on the antidepressant? And she says, well, you know, I was put on it after my husband died. I said, oh, that's really a shame. I'm sorry to hear that. When did he die? And she says, 40 years ago. So I said, Susan. So I said, wow, he must have been a really great guy, you know. But that's the thing. If you don't ask that, you would never know. So I think the communication, it's really important, though, too. It's the communication between the doctor, the patient, the family, the staff. You're all on the same page and trying to get to common goals. But it's one of the key points in deprescribing.
Before this podcast, I was speaking with one of our other AMDA leaders, Dr. Swati Gaur, who is also a geriatrician and a hospice and palliative care doctor, and she said, it's a journey. It's a journey you need to take with regard to medications, because we were talking about the concept of deprescribing. I thought that was very intuitive.
Our interview will continue after this brief message from Afoundria, the creators of ChartPath. Our world is changing, and the demands on your practice are growing. Nobody wants to just buy an EHR. You want a technology partner by your side. That's why they built ChartPath, a simple-to-manage and simple-to-use EHR backed by a dedicated team 24/7 that will guide your practice through MIPS and help you manage your growth. Most importantly, ChartPath is efficient, so you can continue to give your patients the high level of care you are known for and still make it home in time for dinner.
We're talking with Dr. Dan Haimowitz about deprescribing in post-acute and long-term care. Dr. Haimowitz, we need to discuss the role of the clinical pharmacist, or we need to make the clinical pharmacist part of an ongoing discussion. We have the ability every day to to learn about medications and their appropriate use from these experts. It's what they do. And we know that there is a benefit from doing so. What are the barriers in post-acute care that are preventing the clinical pharmacist from having more of an impact in reducing polypharmacy, preventing adverse effects of medications, and implementing deprescribing practices?
Well, first I have to say, Wayne, that I agree with you entirely. I think this is what AMDA is. We are collaborative. And I think a good geriatrician, a good physician works with teams. I think the consultant pharmacist has a really important role to play in this. But there are always problems in our journey, right, bumps along the road. There are some consulting pharmacists who are better than others. So I think in that instance, I think the role of the involved physician, the medical director, can actually help the consultant pharmacist to say, here's things I want to talk about, or give them suggestions. Here's the literature. I mean, I personally think the medical director should be speaking to the consultant pharmacist regularly. This is what I think of your advice, the advice you're giving. This is not what I think of your advice. here's an area you can address. This is what I see as a concern. So that's one thing you can do. Maybe probably more of an issue is getting the other physicians, the non-enlightened, or, you know, the non-choir, is how do they respond to these things? You know, if you get the data, if you and the consultant pharmacist can work together and say, this is what the data shows, this is what the literature is, I think they can be an enormous help to you doing things, because you still see things that you think would be intuitively obvious, because I think people assume things. Like, for example, they'll have somebody on hospice, and they'll go, well, because they're on hospice, we've looked at their medication list, and their medication list has, you know, it matches their goal. But it's not that way. You'll have 95-year-old demented people on hospice who are still getting a plethora of medications, mm-hmm. dementia medications, hypertensive medications, a lot of medications that they really don't need anymore. So I think that the attending, the medical director, the consultant pharmacist can be really key in how do you get, besides having to follow the regs, of course, is working with you together to slowly, you know, work on the issue. Hmm.
So, somebody else have a question.
Hi, I'm Elspeth Clark. I'm a geriatric fellow at the Duke program. And I was wondering if, my mom was said as a baby boomer, she always has the phrase of better living through chemistry. She has this idea of what many of my patients seem to have, where, you know, they've been told to have medications on for so long by all their, you know, cardiologists and doctors. So I wonder, looking forward into, you know, what I'll be practicing, say, 20 years down the line, do you think deprescribing is going to become harder as the baby boomers age?
Thank you. That's an excellent question. And you're from Duke. I have to say Duke is a really great place. Incredible, isn't it? Yeah. Well, my statement when I talk to families a lot is, rather than saying that, I say, you know, which I guess counters that is, do you take medicines to live or do you live to take medicines, right? Which is it? Because you're right about that. And it's really multifactorial. There's a lot of things that go into it. For example, a lot of times patients, I think, value doctors at different levels, right? So, you know, who do they basically think is the smartest of the bunch? It's cardiologists, right? Cardiologists rank highest. And how you know that is in the nursing home is anytime they have follow-up with a patient, who's always the first one them to see? The cardiologist. So let's just say, let me give you an example. You have a patient who's very old, very frail, has a low quality of life, who the use of statins, there was a mention of statin today at the general session, you think the risks of statins outweigh the benefits, okay? So you write the order, stop the statin. Many, many times, I'll tell you, the family, the patient or the family will say, well, no, I'll ask the cardiologist first. Now, who do you think knows more about geriatrics? This is an easy question. I'll ask you, Wayne. Who do you think knows more about geriatrics, a board-certified geriatrician or a cardiologist? This is a toughie. Do you need time to think?
A geriatrician?
I would say that's true. But that's the point, is that this is what we're battling. That's what I think we need to work at. And there are efforts that are going on, national efforts, where the Society of Consulting Pharmacists and Cardiologists, the American College of Cardiology, are working on this because they don't see it from our point of view. So I think that, you know, you want to know your stuff, know your evidence. You will, as trained geriatric fellows, you'll know what you're doing, and you want to do the right thing for people, okay? But you got to pick your battles to some effect, right? Like, I'll see patients who you'll say, what medicines are you on? They'll go to the back of the pocket and they'll pull up their list. It's like a scroll with has like 100 alternative medicines on it. You know, and now they're making pills out of stuff. This is the strangest thing, of stuff you eat, right? So it's like activated garlic and cinnamon and turmeric. I don't know why that is, but it's so difficult to get patients off of these medicines. You know, they're more likely to stop a prescription med than an over-the-counter alternative medicine. But I think it's a journey. You know, and you want to talk to patients and families and say, this is the evidence. I can't make you do this, but I can just tell you that. And I really think, and this is anecdotal, just in my experience, a majority of patients will accept stopping a medicine if you show them the evidence. And there's certain other areas. Like, for example, I think a prime area for deprescribing is dementia. And it's all your approach, okay? I mean, you got to be really careful. You don't want to be a medication nihilist where you're just saying all medicines are bad, you know, but you want to try to use them appropriately. So for me, for dementia, my introduction to this to families is, look, I'll just tell you my take on this. To me, dementia is a terminal illness, right? It's like cancer, and you can't cure it, okay? So look, I can continue these medications, but this is what the evidence shows. And as an example, let's say baby aspirin. Let's take baby aspirin as a little example. What is the risk of baby aspirin? I mean, it's not much. I mean, there's some evidence they say now that you have a higher incidence of bleeds. But in general, would you think that baby aspirin is safe? Sure you would, right? So there's just a little risk. In an older, frail, very old, very frail, very demented person, what's the benefit? Zero. So in this instance, risk outweighs benefit. So I think if families who see patients with dementia, for example, they get this. They really do. So if you're focusing on what are your goals, what's your quality of life, how can we work together to help each other, that's where I think is the framework that comes into saying, this is what we want to do about medications. So our topic is deprescribing, but it's actually in the whole, what you're giving medications. I mean, if you see somebody who's not getting a medicine that they should, well, then you should do that. It's medication appropriateness, right? Or if you want to use a good word, which I think is a term, medication stewardship, right? Deprescribing is a part of medication stewardship. But I think looking at it with what the patient's comorbidities are, what's your risks and benefits, what's the quality of life. Those are, to me, the key issues that you should be looking at.
So at the time we have left, I want to be a little provocative with you. It seems to me that one of the greatest issues with medication management, including deprescribing, revolves around our inability to standardize medication reconciliation. We know that the need to reconcile medications is crucial to helping reduce the fragmentation we see in patient care, especially in transitions. If we cannot perform adequate medication reconciliation, how can we even begin to consider deprescribing? Are the associated necessary transitions in patient care a functional barrier to deprescribing as well?
Well, medication reconciliation is a very good topic, and I believe that AMDA is focusing some efforts on, I'm not sure where that, they are focusing some efforts on that. I think you need to separate the two issues, okay? Is medication reconciliation important? Oh, yes. Is an important part of the medication administration process? Absolutely. But medication reconciliation, true medication reconciliation, I think can be a part of deprescribing. For example, if you're going to deprescribe, and if you want to use an alternative term for deprescribing, it's looking at a person's medicines and seeing if they're on some that they don't need that you can stop, okay? That's not the formal definition, but that's what we're thinking about. So medication reconciliation is a good opportunity to look at the meds that somebody has been put on that are new and stopping them. Let me give you what to me is a very good and unrecognized example of medication reconciliation. You have a patient who's stable on their current drug regimen. They go to the hospital and they come back with an increase or new blood pressure medicines and increase in their blood sugars. Okay. Now, in my opinion, if a person
has been on high blood pressure medicines go to the hospital for something unrelated to their pressure, what should be immediately done is put them back on the medications they're on before. Right? I mean, think about it. If you see somebody in the office and their pressure is high, a one-time thing that their pressure is high, right, would you start an antihypertensive? No, you wouldn't, right? You'd say, let's wait. Maybe it's white coat syndrome. Maybe you're stressed. Go home and come back. But what do we routinely do in the hospital? I mean, when they come back from the hospital, we put them on medicines. That's an ideal spot for saying, I'm not going to do that. So I think you have to incorporate the circumstances of why, you know, ask the question why. The same thing with asking about the antidepressant. Why did this happen? And looking at why it happened, then you can look at MedRec and say, well, I'm actually going to do something that will help a person. I saw a patient in the nursing home, a father of a colleague of mine, who was sick, comes back to the nursing home. They doubled his blood pressure meds and quadrupled his blood sugar meds, quadrupled them, in a 93-year-old, very, very ill gentleman. Now, why would you do that? And as it turns out, he died 3 days later. Now, not because of the medicines, I actually stopped them. But I'm saying, I don't think a lot of people who are ordering the medicines understand or see the big picture. Mm-hmm. They're losing the forest for the trees, as it is said.
We have been privileged to speak with and learn from geriatrician and educator, Dr. Daniel Haymowitz. Dr. Haymowitz, thank you so very much for spending your time with AMDA On The Go.
Thank you, Wayne.
References for this podcast can be found at paltc.podbean.com. Until next time, I'm Dr. Wayne Saltzman for this innovation podcast that we call...
Support for this podcast is provided by Afoundria, the makers of ChartPath. If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast title. Thank you.